Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Hello, I'm Brian Cox.
I'm Robin Ince. The Infinite Monkey Cage is back and we are starting the series with a whole show about trees with Dame Judi Dench. What else we got, Brian?
We're going to do What a Gas with Mark Miodovnik. Unexpected Science History with Rufus Hound. I don't know what he knows about unexpected science history.
Well, that's unexpected thing. He hasn't got a clue.
No, I'm hoping we're having some experts on there. Exploring with Annika Rice.
No, that's just one of your dreams. The other night I dreamt I was exploring with Annika Rice. And also Alien Life in Glastonbury with Chris Lintott.
Yeah.
Infinite Monkey Cage.
Listen, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, I'm James Reynolds. Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. In BBC OS Conversations, we bring people together to share their experiences. And this time, it's conversations with voters in Britain and France. Both countries have voted for political change in recent days. And we've travelled to towns and cities across the UK to try to get a sense of what life is like for the people there. We also bring together young people in France, where a major talking point is immigration.
Mass immigration is just not a thing at all. Like, it's just
that
not real.
That was a thing for you.
In what way is it impacting you as a person, Fernando? I know we're not
because
voting only for ourselves.
It's my future, actually. It's our future of France.
Sunny Worthing, come on down and see what we've got to offer here in Sunny Worthing in West Sussex by the sea. And God save the King!
I wish it had been sunny, but that was the greeting our team received from the traditional town crier in the English south coast town of Worthing. Town criers in Britain can be traced back hundreds of years. They were, I guess you could say, the newsreaders of their day. They're welcome to have another go if they want, and they share important information on the street. On the other hand, I got a nice, sheltered window seat and table in a cosy restaurant on the end of the pier, which juts right out into the English Channel, just as well, because the weather was cold, wet and windy. That is the British summer. For the first stop on our mini UK tour, I want to take you back a week to the day after the general election in the UK. Voters had just delivered a landslide victory for the Labour Party, seeing a change of government for the first time in 14 years that made Sir Keir Starmer the new Prime Minister. And Worthing lost its Conservative Member of Parliament too. It had been a Conservative-held seat since 1841, the early days of Queen Victoria. We brought together Pam, who works part-time. She voted Liberal Democrat. That's a centre-left and the third biggest party in the UK. And Mike also joined us. He owns a tea business and he voted Labour.
I don't think anybody's expecting a quick change. I think people understand the situation that the UK is in and what the challenges that the whole world faces. And so I don't think they're expecting overnight magic. What people are hoping for is a consistent path and a consistent direction for us to move in. And I think mostly honesty.
I agree with Mike. I think that's completely what everybody wants. We certainly all want honesty. We're all fed up with one thing after another of reading the papers or going on to social media's platforms and finding out that MPs have done this, that and the other. We're fed up with that. We want to be told to understand the rules of living in Britain, but we also need to be reassured that the people above us are going to go with those rules too.
Is France on people's minds here as you look across the channel, or does France and mainland Europe, now that Britain is out of the European Union, feel a bit more distant?
It feels far away because of what happened when we came out of the EU. It's now more difficult for us to travel back and forth. We need things like pet passports and all sorts of things like that, which is added complications.
The vote feels like it was a long way away. The ramifications of that vote, there's the personal perspective of you go on holiday and it's a pain. But from a business perspective, so we're half online before the votes, 20% of our online business was international. That slimmed right down. The hassle of sending anything internationally has shot up. The hassle of importing anything has shot up. And the big problem in terms of your question is the regulations are still constantly changing. We still don't actually have clarity however many years down the line we are from it, that part still is very close to heart.
And Mike, I know you work in a number of places here on the South Coast, but if you and I were to go for a walk in Worthing, get to the end of this pier and go into the town, take us through a tour, what would we see?
What you'd see is a town that's transitioning, which fits with the story of this changing MP. But we've got a town centre which has a lot of empty units, a lot of the units which are there are the same units which you see on any coastal town high street in the UK. They're not necessarily special and experiential and something which you would make the trip into the town to go and see. So you find that in a town like Worthing, a lot of the people who live on the outskirts perhaps don't come into the town centre here as much as they could or would do, and instead go to London, go to Brighton, go to other places. That said, we're on the seaside, we've got the pier, we've got beautiful cinemas, and that side, as it's transitioning and becoming perhaps a different demographic, has led to fantastic restaurants like the one which we're sat in, springing up, and another brilliant one which opened recently, which I can see out of a window just on the land side of a pier.
I would show you a town which is predominantly a little bit run down, but there's an awful lot of hope and there's an awful lot of money still around. And this town attracts both young and old. And the young and old people that it attracts have the money to go to independent tea shops. They want to go out for coffees and meals out. And they are that generation and they are able to do that. But they've been so tightly squeezed, or maybe they're being nervously pushed. They're not doing it at the moment.
Pam and Mike in Worthing. And let's pick up on what Pam was saying about young people feeling squeezed by the cost of living. That's a consequence of prices increasing at a faster rate than people's incomes. For our next stop, we head north to the city of Bradford. Now, a century ago, Bradford was one of the wealthiest cities in the world, a centre of the wool and fabric industry. Today, though, that industry is long gone, and the city is considered one of the poorest in England. With the youngest population in the UK, it is also the hardest place to get a job. So, we brought together three young people to get their perspectives on the challenges they face.
Hello, my name is Anna, and I think both in Bradford and nationally, the biggest thing that I care about is just having equal opportunities for everyone. At the minute, the wealth disparity in England is so vast that there's almost no opportunity for you if you don't fit into a certain socioeconomic class almost. And I think the wealth disparity at the moment seeps into all aspects of our lives. You know, you see it in education, you see it just socially, you see it in friendship groups. For example, I hope to one day practice as a barrister, and All About Law published some statistics recently that 71% of practicing barristers were privately educated. I went to state school. I also live on the outskirts of Bradford, and by no means am I from an upper class background. And I just feel like if being a barrister is promoted as a profession that requires private education, that is something that has never been accessible to me and never will be accessible to my siblings. So yeah, I think one thing that I would like to see in the future, both in Bradford and nationally, is a wider range of opportunities for everyone.
I'm Anika, and I think the biggest issue Bradford is facing is the level of poverty. People who grow up in poverty tend to remain in poverty, but I think that's because we don't give them access to the services that they would need and the skills that they need to get themselves out of poverty. For example, community centres and universities are getting funding cuts. And then how can we expect people to learn those skills or be in environments where they can increase those skills to be able to get out of poverty? So I think if we don't tackle it from the roots, then we won't be able to support people in the best way.
Hello, that's Abdurrahman. Thank you for having me. A lot of great points, and I believe maybe one or two of the main issues, because they impact many of the people I know, whether as students, international students, people who are poor or locals, is the housing crisis and employment hardship. I find that with inflation, what's been going on, the prices have been always higher. It's harder to get a tenancy. You end up having to take what's available for you. And when you don't have the right opportunity or the right job, you kind of feel like you're outside the map and you end up settling for what's available. So I would love to see change in that, as it impacts all students or people I know, or refugees or asylum seekers, all equally. So that is one of the main issues I had to face myself. But slowly, with knowing more people, I'm able to overcome it. But I wonder, the people who are not well-linked or networking, how are they actually solving this problem?
I don't think there is much opportunity in Bradford to build a life for anyone. I don't think there is much available. And I also think it's very divided. People are often pit against each other in Bradford. And this divide does nothing but lessen opportunities for people. I also think, you know, as was mentioned before by Anika, a lot of youth centres have been shut down. A lot of extracurricular activities have been defunded. And it's a shame because, you know, it's doubly beneficial, these things. You know, you go to a youth centre, not only are you pursuing a passion, you're building a hobby, also you're meeting people, and it's just been mentioned, you know, it's not what you know anymore, it's who you know. But all these opportunities are being closed down. You know, like, I was able to find my job because I worked at a pub and I overheard a conversation about a job going, and I just said, you know, please can I have that job? Please can I apply for that job? But I don't think at the current state that Bradford's in, it's a place for anyone to build a life at all. I think once children leave college, there's not much available.
That's true. When we cut budgets of services that are supposed to support people, where are the young people going to go? They're going to go out on the streets, and they're going to probably do things they regret that could get them into prison, which would further reduce their chances of building a life here. And then again, they're going to be stuck in poverty because they don't have the opportunities. So giving funding to these services, building them, is a critical part of developing our young people. But if they're taken away, then we leave them with nothing.
I agree with the points mentioned, but being here for 4 years, it is really hard not to care, and I would love to see change. So I do try to see what else can be changed, and if there's anything I can help. And Bradford, although a poor city, is an attraction to many different nationalities who come from abroad, whether it's for the food, whether it's for the vibrant culture, just like how it will be in 2025. It's the city of culture, and I think with proper care, things can happen. I've been here for 4 years, and I still love the people here and love the people I've met.
28-year-old Abdul Rahman, who works in AI, 25-year-old psychology student Anika, and law student Anna. And Anna mentioned the education system in Britain. And just to be clear, state schools provide free education, whilst private schools tend to require a fee. You're listening to BBC OS Conversations on voters in Britain and France. I'm James Reynolds.
Der Disney Plus Serientipp.
Hey, hier spricht Meredith Grey, direkt aus dem Grey Sloan Memorial Hospital. Wir suchen Verstärkung, denn hier kommen viele neue Fälle rein. Unsere Station ist voll mit außergewöhnlichen Patienten, jungen Ärzten in Ausbildung und viel zwischenmenschlichem Drama. Also schau schnell vorbei.
Grey's Anatomy, die neuen Folgen und alle Staffeln nur auf Disney Plus streamen. Abo schon ab 5,99 € pro Monat. Und nun viel Spaß beim Podcast, wünscht Disney Plus.
Hello, I'm Brian Cox.
I'm Robin Ince. The Infinite Monkey Cage is back, and we are starting the series with a whole show about trees with Dame Judi Dench. What else we got, Brian?
We're going to do What a Gas with Mark Miodovnik. Unexpected Science History with Rufus Hound. I don't know what he knows about Unexpected Science History.
Well, that's the unexpected thing. He hasn't got a clue.
No, I'm hoping we're having some experts on there. Exploring with Annika Rice.
No, that's just one of your dreams. The other night I dreamt I was exploring with Annika Rice. And also, Alien Life in Glastonbury with Chris Lintott.
Yeah.
Infinite Monkey Cage.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Our final stop in England is the southeastern port of Dover, famous for its white cliffs. The town is also on the front line for illegal immigration. We'll come on to that in a moment. Like Worthing, which we heard from earlier, Dover voted in a Labour MP. The Conservative candidate came third. We've mentioned the cost of living and how many people are finding it hard to pay for things. So our first stop when we made it to Dover was the Beehive Community Cafe. Inside the cafe, there's also a shop run by Laura. The shop sells secondhand clothes and provides them free to women in need.
We had one lady come in and she was wearing clothes borrowed by a friend. She had absolutely no other clothes at all. She needed a winter coat at the time when she came in. And we went out the back in our stock room just to see if we'd got anything. And we had one, a specific size for her. And it was a little bit different and it was just really beautiful. The embroidery was stunning. And as she put it on, you could see her grow like 10 inches. It was just such a beautiful story. And yeah, one of our favourites.
I know you haven't even racked up a year here.
No.
But from all your conversations with other charities and with some of the women coming in here, has there been a change in how much women in Dover rely on services like yours?
Yeah, I'd say absolutely. The level of need right across the town has just got higher and higher. We've actually got a lady here as well that is the manager for the Dover Food Bank, and she has said, like, exponentially, the number of people that are coming in and requiring their support as well, it's just growing and it's getting ever more, so yeah.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you tell me your name, please?
I'm Jane.
How long have you been a volunteer here?
Since November when it opened.
What's it been like working here?
It's brilliant, yeah. I've learnt new things and I learnt how to use a coffee machine and I'm very proud of that. People only see the negative side and there's a lot of positives that go on in Dover, but in the press and everything, all you ever see is the negative sides. And family that live away from here think we're completely stuck with lorries and refugees, and that's not the case.
What are some of the positive things?
The positive things is things like this that's going on. A lot of people support a lot of people. If there's people in need and the town knows that, money's raised, support's given, and it's really a supportive area.
Can you tell me your name, please?
I'm Susie.
Hi.
I'm Joelle. Well, we're here, we're having a little meeting. We're both self-employed, so we're talking about collaboration opportunities, but I also actually volunteer here.
Tell us a bit about life here in Dover.
To be honest, it's quite challenging at the moment with the cost of living. People are really struggling with food, so they end up eating junk food rather than the healthy food that we all actually need that's better for our well-being. Fuel prices are ridiculous. There's a lot of unemployment. So there are bright spots, but there's also a lot of challenges.
How is being on the channel next to France have an impact on life on Dover?
So I can actually see France from my house on a clear day. But I tend not, you know, I used to go over to France quite frequently. I don't now. And you're kind of aware that they have a different life out there now. It's very different in Britain how it was before Brexit, I think.
France feels more distant now?
In some ways, yeah. I think we're excluded in many ways. I think there was a lot of pushback.
How close does France feel for you?
That's a great question. I'm French.
Yeah. So the answer is very close.
So I do travel back and forth to France quite a lot. But, yeah, it probably has changed. And maybe there's some hard feelings between France and Britain nowadays. The travelling's got more difficult for Brits. You have to have 3 months or 6 months on your passport to be able to travel back and forth easily. It's expensive to get a passport in the first instance. But at the same time, you know, there's all the beautiful weather in France and delicious wine. So it's still a big attraction, I'd say.
Voices there from the Beehive Community Cafe in Dover. And I mentioned that the Conservatives came in third in Dover. Well, the party that came in second was a relatively new one. Reform. Nationally, it won 5 seats in Parliament. And a main focus for the party is immigration. It is a major issue for many people in Dover. The small boats operated by people smugglers land on the beaches nearby. We spoke to one Reform voter, a retired paramedic for the National Health Service, the NHS. His name is Gary.
Successive governments have lied again and again about how they're going to control immigration. I'm not against immigration. I'm not against mass immigration on this scale and the illegal immigration. We don't know who these people are. The figures are way, way too high. You've got so many thousands coming that it's just put a pressure on the NHS, everything. In fact, roads, housing, universities, schools. There's just too many people coming, and that's the end of it. I'm not against immigration, I'm against mass immigration.
That's Gary in Dover. And just to be clear on the numbers, official figures say net migration to the UK fell 10% last year after hitting a record high in 2022. The figures suggest the difference between the number of people arriving in the UK and leaving was 685,000 in the year to December 2023. Well, at its narrowest point, the stretch of sea between Dover and Calais in France is 34 kilometres wide. If you are a world-class swimmer, you'd be able to make it in one go. The issue of immigration will resonate with our next guests across the channel in France. The far-right National Rally Party was predicted to win the snap election, but ended up in third place. The winners were an alliance of left-wing parties, though the National Rally did get enough votes to become the single largest party in the French Parliament. National Rally policies include giving French citizens national preference over immigrants for jobs and housing. It also wants to abolish the right of automatic citizenship to many children of migrants. So, for our final conversation, we brought together Julie, an office worker. She voted for the New Popular Front, a left-wing party. Benoit is a legal advisor who voted for President Macron's Renaissance Party, seen as a centrist movement. And Fernando voted for the National Rally.
I'm a student and I'm unable to afford housing and I'm rejected from social housing, actually. I commute 1.5 hours daily for my studies. And the National Rally, with its conservative approach and social economic program, immediately appealed to me. For example, regarding energy taxes, they are too high, but also public services are neglected and inefficient. Also, it is evident that the identity aspect of the National Rally also attracted me, as the entire French political field has left the issue of immigration to the party, treating any opposing views with hysteria. I find it insincere to be surprised by the rise of the National Rally, when this party is left as the sole defender of French culture, actually.
Fernando, what is it that you call the French identity that you want to protect so much?
Well, I would say that in education, we have to implement cultural, traditional courses with some incentives with young people that are disconnected with cultural and identities regarding regions. For example, the language in Bretagne has to be preserved. But also, I would say that there are, in France, an ambience, a climate, when we say, Europeans did bad things in the past, we have to apologize for it, we have to pay for reparations, and because our ancestors did bad things, we have to change our societies, change our civilization, that is, well, all these bad things.
Yeah, well, I think it's called the duty to remember, to make sure that we don't repeat the mistakes of the past. It's not so much being like, we did bad things. It's just about remembering what happened on our continent and being aware that we shouldn't repeat it. And I think if you guys had won the elections, I think this would have been repeating history. Unfortunately, like, I'm sorry for the comparison, but Hitler did arrive in power legally. People voted for Hitler and then we know what happened. And I'm sorry, maybe it might be too far of a comparison here. But
yeah, it's too far because Hitler actually said clearly what he wanted to do with Germany. And we are Republican. We believe in institutions. We believe in parliamentary. We believe in democracy. And that Hitler didn't believe in it.
Benoit, let me bring you in here. Won't you make it what you're hearing?
I'm pretty shocked by what I can hear, especially regarding culture and French values. I have to completely disagree with that. Fernando quoted Brittany. If you go to Brittany, it's still written in the original language. You still have the traditions. You still have a lot of cultural aspects regarding the importance of the culture in Brittany. So I don't think that's a relevant point to mention.
And Fernando, you believe there's too much immigration, legal immigration and illegal immigration in France.
Yeah. And as 74% of French people, actually, they reject the government's policies regarding immigration. Actually, we are a lot and more than you. Because this principle of two-round elections operates in such a way that this is a coalition of losers that unites against the winner. For example, if we had the same system as in the UK, we would have had 295 MPs, a majority, and Bardella as a prime minister. We could have proposed a national union project.
I get what Fernando is saying. I understand his concerns. But why would you be bothered as a 20-year-old about immigration when you know mass immigration is just not a thing at all? Like, it's just
that's
not
a thing for you.
In what way is it impacting you as a person, Fernando? I know we're not
because
voting only for ourselves.
It's my future, actually. It's our future of France.
The future of your French national identity of a Christian white person,
yeah.
Is it? Right.
You're caricaturing it, actually. I come from Portuguese immigration, and a large part of my family does not have French nationality. But it's precisely because I believe in this national union project that I support this party. And for me, voting for the National Rally is a demonstration of my assimilation, actually.
Were you born in France?
Yes, I was born in France.
Which is why you have French nationality.
Yeah.
That is one thing that the National Rally wants to strip away from
my
people like you.
My grandfather is French.
All right.
So I have the blood, actually, sovereignty.
Oh, so it's a question of blood. Okay.
I don't think there is a problem with mass immigration. I really think that French people are proud to be French And France is a multicultural country. It's about French people who were born in France, but also a lot of people who became French because they wanted to, and they clearly believed in what France could offer to them. And I think it's still the case right now.
Benoît, Julie and Fernando in France. Our thanks to them and all of our guests this week. I'm James Reynolds. You've been listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service.
Hello, I'm Brian Cox.
I'm Robin Ince. The Infinite Monkey Cage is back and we are starting the series with a whole show about trees with Dame Judi Dench. What else have we got, Brian?
We're going to do What a Gas with Mark Miodobnik, Unexpected Science History with Rufus Hound. I don't know what he knows about Unexpected Science History.
Well, that's unexpected thing. He hasn't got a clue.
No, I'm hoping we're having some experts on there. Exploring with Annika Rice.
No, that's just one of your dreams. The other night I dreamt I was exploring with Annika Rice. And also Alien Life in Glastonbury with Chris Lintott.
Yeah.
Infinite Monkey Cage.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.